We're glad that you're with us. We also set up three rooms down the hallway with closed-circuit TVs, so if families come and they got kids and they say, oh, my kids may not be able to sit through the whole service, you can grab a room, you can watch everything live and still fellowship after the services. So we learned a lot, but we're looking forward to the full comeback, and I'm praying that we do get a vaccine and we get back to some normalcy in our lives. But it's been a ride, and I mean, there's been a lot of folks been discouraged, but a lot of folks that have been gone through depression, things like that. And so I'm hoping we have a great comeback in our nation and our world. Spiritually, I hope we have that. I think it's tested all of us, you know, spiritually and stuff. And you know, those of us in ministry, we've never seen anything like this, to where close down the church building in a sense and work out of homes and not be able to have contact. And by nature, churches are social groups where we're here to fellowship, and that's a major part of it, and build friendships and relationships. And so we're praying for a comeback. So each week I share some thoughts about comeback. And last week I talked about the idea of how to internalize the setback you're going through. There's a purpose for all setbacks. Today I'm going to talk about a character in the Bible that I really think is probably one of the most known characters in the Bible. It is a success story. It is a story of great leadership and faith, but it didn't start out that way, and we're going to talk about the life of Moses. But I'm going to start by ending the story right now. We all know that the end of Moses' story is that he went in and he debated with the Pharaohs. They had the 10 plagues. He kept saying, let my people go. And I've said it before, every time I hear that, let my people go, I have this image of Charlton Heston in my mind from the Ten Commandments movie. And if I get to heaven and the real Moses is more like Danny DeVito, I'm going to be very disappointed, you know, because I have this image of Charlton Heston, and a great movie, a great portrayal of what took place. But we know he succeeded, and we know that he led the children of Israel out of Egypt. We know he led them up to the premise of the promised land. He wasn't able to take them across. Joshua did that. So we know he ended as a success. But he was an individual who was never supposed to make it. He was never supposed to really have the great opportunity he did to lead a nation of Israel. He was not destined from the beginning of his life to have greatness in his life, and we're going to talk about a few episodes in his life. And then we're going to talk about the turning point in God's conversation with him that really, I call this what's in your hand, because when I was reading this week, this really jumped out at me about what's in your hand. We'll get to that in a few minutes here. But let's first start off with the first part of his life in Exodus chapter number 2, 1 through 4. It's on the screens behind me if you'd like to look there. It says, now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could not hide him no longer, she got papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put him in the reeds along the banks of the Nile. His sister stood at a great distance to see what would happen to him. And I think most know this part of the story, and to kind of set it up here. Throughout the course of history, this was the Egyptian Empire, which was prevalent this time. The Roman Empire had the same type of situations. Anytime a large group of people that they had conquered and that they had as their slaves, or they had as, you know, could be a threat, they always weeded it out to make sure they could not grow in number, especially male children. And so there was a number of times in scriptures, Old Testament and New Testament, to where the leaders, either the Roman Empire of Augustus, or we had the Pharaoh this time, would put out a decree that any child 2 years old and under would be put to death. Now, we can't imagine that. We can't imagine that kind of thinking. And as I'm a student of history, and I'm reading a book on Caesar right now, some of the stuff I just can't explain. Why in the world would somebody think this is okay? But they did that. And at the time that Moses was born, that was the edict, that was the law that was put out there, that any male child that 2 years and under would be put to death, to weed out the possibility of that nation of Israel growing into a larger population than Egypt and conquering them. So it was a preemptive strike when it came to warfare. Well, Moses is born to this wonderful couple. The religious leaders, obviously, they're Levites, and they got this edict, and they hid Moses for a while, but I don't know about you, it's kind of hard to hide a baby for too long, obviously. And so they were people of faith, and so they decided to trust God, let God determine it. And so they made a basket up, and they used all kinds of stuff to make it secure so it would float, and they hid it on the banks of the Nile River, and they left the sister there to watch this basket. And you think about this, and we know what happens in the story is that, you know, one of the leaders of Egypt, the wife, found the baby and raised Moses as her own in an Egyptian household. But when this mother and father did this, they had no really understanding. They really had no comprehension of what was going to take place. This was a risk. This was a step of faith. They didn't know. And so when Moses was put in this basket and the sister watched it for a while, and we know the story goes a little further to where the leader of Egypt, the Pharaoh's family, adopted this child, didn't tell anybody about it, and raised this child in the Egyptian home as an Egyptian prince. And that's how his really first 40 years of his life had come about. But I want you to get this. Moses, from the day he was born, was not supposed to succeed. He was not supposed to do anything. In fact, he was destined for death. But that's not what God had planned for him. Let's go to another section of his life in Exodus chapter 2, verses 11 through 15. It says, one day after Moses had grown up, and now he's a prince in the Egyptian kingdom, he went out to where his own people were and watched them as they labored hard, did their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Looking at this, no one was seeing him, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day he went out and saw the two Hebrews fighting, and he asked one of them what was wrong. Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? The man said, who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me also like you did the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and thought, what I did must have become known. When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, and there he sat down by a well. Once again, Moses now had lived 40 years in the king of Egypt. He was a prince of Egypt, but for some reason, and we don't really know if he really knew that he was Hebrew. Now, if you go back to the story, when he was a baby and he was taken to the Egyptian home, obviously he needed to be nursed. And so they brought in a maiden that would come in and nurse him, who was actually his mother. So along the time, there might have been conversation. No matter how it goes about, whether he knew his Hebrew or not, he saw an injustice. And when he saw this injustice of an Egyptian ruler or leader beating a Hebrew, he intervened and he killed the Egyptian soldier and he hid him in the sand. Well, he thought no one had saw this. He thought he got away with this. And next day he's out there and he sees two Hebrews fighting. He goes, why are you fighting with yourself? And they turn to him and says, what are you talking about? What do you care if we fight with ourselves? Aren't you the one that killed one of your own? And they didn't know he was Hebrew. And he realized he was known, and the word got out to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh sought to kill him. And we know that Moses took off across the desert for his second 40 years experience. Now, Moses lived 120 years. The first 40 years he lived, obviously, as a prince of Egypt. For the second 40 years, he lived in the wilderness. He lived out in no man's land. And for 40 years, he felt everything was over. I want you to comprehend this. When he went out into the desert, he found a family out there. He met a man named Jesse. He married one of his daughters. And Moses settled into what he expected to be his life. No great successes, no big challenges. He figured, this is what I'm destined to be, and he sat out there for 40 years. Let's go on with the story here. It says here in chapter 3, verses 1 through 4, it says, now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, and the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared in him in a flame of fire from within a bush. And Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. And when the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here am I. Another interesting episode of his life. So he's on the backside of the desert. He's tending the sheep. He's doing the work for his father-in-law. He's married the daughter. He has this basically common life with really nothing special going on, and all of a sudden he sees a burning bush, and we know the story if you ever raised in church. It was a burning bush that basically, you know, kind of put forth the image of God and the power of God. And Moses walked up to that burning bush, and all of a sudden a voice came out and says, "Moses, Moses," and he says, "Here am I." Let's talk a little bit about what happened after that. God began to talk to him about his destiny. God began to talk to him about his comeback. Now, I want you to understand this. You know, Moses now had been distant from Egypt for 40 years. He had put Egypt out of his mind. He wasn't concerned anymore about anything that happened there. I mean, you go 40 years away from something, it's kind of hard to really imagine yourself back there. And God begins to talk to him about the plight and the issues of his people back in Egypt. He's telling him that your people are suffering under this bondage and this captivity, and they're suffering. And God turns to him and says, "Listen, I have chosen you to go back now and to free my people." And Moses is like, wow. Now, I want you to think about this. Humanly speaking, I'm sure what's going on in Moses' mind, he says, you know, you could have done this 40 years ago. I was already there. I mean, you could have used me right. You could have done something right then. And then Moses begins to talk about all of his inadequacies. He says, you know, I try to be a leader in Egypt, God, but that didn't work out. I've been out here. I'm pretty settled right now. I'm enjoying my common life. The family's doing good. I got a good job here taking care of the sheep. And he says, in all reality, I'm not trained for this either. I've been out here 40 years, and I don't know how to speak to people. We've been kind of isolated from people. I don't see how you could use me. And that's the conversation they're having. And a lot of times when we go through our setbacks, we go through times that we just feel like we're on the backside of the desert, we don't see in ourselves that we have any hope of ever achieving something great. We don't see ourselves as performing something miraculous. We don't see how this is all going to work out, because being, you know, metaphorically on the backside of the desert, away from things for a while, you don't see your importance or what God could use for you. Setbacks do that. Setbacks get in our head. They make us think that this is it. There's not going to be anything better. But God has a way of informing us there's always something better ahead. And here's what I truly believe. I believe that God took this 80 years to prep Moses for the biggest task in his life. And it took 80 years to do it. You know, we've had setbacks for like 8 months now. Can you imagine a setback for 40 years in the desert? And God comes to you and says, "Listen, I got a job for you to do." And you're thinking, "I'm not qualified." Then we get to the heart of the passage that I want to share this morning here, and I love this. It says, Moses answered, "What if they do not believe or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you?' Then the Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' A staff," replied. The Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." And Moses threw it on the ground and became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." So Moses reached out and took it, hold of the snake, and took it back into the staff, into his hand. "This," said the Lord, "is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, a God of Isaac, and a God of Jacob, has appeared to you." This is where I get the kind of title for this message, "What's in Your Hand." Moses had his setbacks. He's arguing with God, "You can't use me. I'm washed up. My time has gone by. I'm not qualified." And God turns to him and says, "What's in your hand?" And it was a shepherd's staff. Now let's talk about that for a second. It's interesting how that God, even through the words of Jesus Christ, uses these metaphors. Remember when he had Peter and James and John caught that great bout of fish? And they were overwhelmed by how much fishes talk. And Jesus says to him, "Today you will be fishers of men." He uses these analogies. And when he turns to Moses and his staff, he was telling Moses, "The last 40 years, you have been well-trained to basically guide sheep from one location to another location. For the last 40 years, that staff has been what you have used to be able to fight off the enemies so your sheep have not been harmed, to correct those that have been gone astray. You know the story about the one sheep that may go astray, and you've used the rod and the staff for that." He says, "But for 40 years, you've had this one wooden oak pole that you've used to be able to guide and shepherd these sheep. And I think what he's trying to say is that I'm sending you as a shepherd back into Egypt, and through this staff, metaphorically, I'm going to lead you through this. But the other side of that is this. What God was trying to tell him is that your resources, your abilities are right in your hand. And with my help, your abilities and your resources is what's going to be used for you to succeed. Your comeback is not just because of you, it's because I use. And he took the staff, he made it into a snake, he just showed Moses that I can do anything through you I want to do. Stop doubting yourself, stop doubting the process, stop doubting the comeback. I have everything in store. And that speaks to us. When God turns to us after we've had our setbacks, it may have been a personal setback, it may have been a situation we caused ourselves, it may have been a situation that happened to us, it may have been something that's been very emotionally straining, it may have been something that's been, you've gone through the bad times in relationship or whatever, and we say to ourselves, it's done. I can't achieve anything anymore. This is it. And God wants to say, you have the talent, you have the ability, you have the resources, you have the intellect, but most importantly, all those things with my power through it, you can achieve your comeback. We know the rest of the story. Moses goes back, and that staff was used quite a bit. He turned into a snake again. He used that staff to be able to turn the river into blood. All those things that God did. And what God was saying, you may doubt yourself for your comeback. You may doubt, you may be living your setback, but I want you to know, with me as your partner, you can have your comeback. In fact, he said to him, every time you're asked the question, who sent you, just say, I am sent me. God sent me. So it comes down to this. You know, when we go through bad times and we blow it, and everybody here is human, so we've all made our mistakes. You can't live long enough in this world without blowing it and messing things up and saying things and doing things you somewhat regret, and you think to yourself, is God done with you? Sometimes we go through situations in relationships, we go through times at work and things didn't work out, and you think, you know, it's all over. And we think sometimes God can never use me. I want to point out here, Moses was a murderer. Not justifying and condoning murder, obviously, but he did. He killed somebody, and that's the part of the story here. Moses basically was an individual who ran and did not hold accountability for what he had done. Moses was an imperfect person. In fact, research says that he was a person who stuttered quite a bit. So that's why he said, I can't speak to the Egyptian leader because I don't have the eloquence of speech. He was a failure in so many ways. He never was supposed to make it in the first place. But he went back to Egypt and he led the greatest exodus recorded in history. 6 million followers to go to the promised land. It was Moses and a staff, but more importantly, it was God's usefulness in his life. You know, I've gone through times where, you know, I've had setbacks. We've all had that. I mean, in ministry speaking, in all these years and stuff, I remember we started this church 19 years ago. And I remember the situation at a time in my life where it was a tremendous setback. Ministry was ending somewhere else, discouraged. And I remember planning on moving to California and taken off or whatever to a family of the church says, would you help us start a church? And I was depressed and discouraged. I felt like we're never going to get anywhere and stuff. And I can remember that setback, and I can remember how that actually, that attitude that I got to just give it all to God is probably what made it somewhat successful, is the fact that God began to work. I've had setbacks in my life personally. I've had setbacks in my life economically. When we started the church here, I remember, you know, going from a full salary at a church and all of a sudden working at a hardware store so we could get the church going, working another job and those kind of things there. And I thought, this is what God called me to do, to work an outside job and do this. That setback placed in God's hands and relied upon God begin to evolve into something that I think is very precious here today. And there is a comeback. And you may have failed. You may have blown it. You may have sinned. You may have done things that you may regret. And you ask the question, is it possible for God to use me again? You got to ask the question, what's in your hand? What's in your hand? And I use that metaphorically, what resources, what talent, what do you have to offer God that God can say, I'll take that and I'll use that in your life to accomplish some great things? We all have a staff in our hand that God can use. And you know, when I think about wanting a comeback and stuff, I think about the story in this. Moses was right about himself. He was inadequate. He was a lousy speaker. And he spent the last 40 years hanging around sheep. He probably didn't smell too good either. And basically, he became a loner, and he lived in a foreign country. He had been out of touch with the current things that are going on. He had all the reason in the world to say, it's not my time, it's not me. And God says, listen, with my help and you leaning on me and trusting me, we're going to free those people. We're going to free those people. One last thing about this before we get to the walk away here. A lot of times God prepares us to be able to benefit others by putting us in situations that are not always happy and we feel good about. I said this last week. A lot of times that God puts in situation to humble us. God puts in situations to reprogram us. Setbacks many times is God's way of getting us alone so he can work on us. So that when it's time for him to use us in the next stage of our life, we are totally prepared with humility, grace, and confidence that I can't do this without God. I can't do this without God. And I believe that's what happened in Moses' life. Moses went from being an egotistical prince of Egypt to a wandering shepherd. I think God had to break him a little bit to prepare him to depend totally upon God. And he succeeded leading the greatest exodus that ever was. I love comeback stories, and this is a great comeback story. It's a great comeback story because it took a person who never was even supposed to survive into this world and used him to accomplish something great. Let me give you the walk away this morning. And the walk away is simply something to think about as we get ready to close out here today. The comeback is always stronger than the setback. What's in your hand? And I truly believe that. Talk about our church recently here. If you that are guests here, I mean, this, you know, you can imagine, you know, this has been a very trying time for churches across our country. And in a small church like this, community church like this, you know, we all of a sudden, you know, we didn't know financially, because we don't have any denominational support, and it's just by the gifts of our own people here. And so in March, I remember closing down, turning the heat off to make sure we got our heat bills down and all that. We wanted to prepare. And we did not know what was going to take place going forward. At first, we put out old messages of mine on the Facebook, and you could listen to. But after a couple weeks, we realized, and our concern was, you know, we can do all these Facebook Live things, but that's not connecting. So we learned about Zoom, and we started having services. I'm talking into a laptop, which is kind of freaky, by the way. But it was nice seeing the people's faces on there. We had what's called the after party. When the service was over, everybody hung around and talked about what their week. And everybody was isolated, so they were just glad to talk to somebody. And they could go to church in their pajamas. And that was kind of cool. And some of you still try to do it when you come into the building, but, you know, that's fine too. But the thing about it is we did all those things there. And, okay, so we used that. And then we decided to come back, I think it was on Father's Day, we came back into the building here with a certain percentage. You know, you had to reserve a seat and stuff. And, you know, of course, now that's been increased now. And the thing about it is, you know, Tony and some of the guys here, and I'm not tech savvy. I don't really know how to use a laptop. I'm an iPad person and an iPhone person. My wife has a Samsung, which is, an off-brand of phone. So I joke, because she's always saying, how do I do this? I said, I don't know. You have a knockoff phone. How do I know? I have an iPhone. But here's the thing about it. We begin to do that, and then we begin to say, okay, we can do services here. We can put a camera there. We can put cameras there and stuff. And that way, if folks are not comfortable coming back yet, we have some folks that are older, and as you get to a certain age, you got to be, your risk factors, and they're not comfortable coming back. But there's also, folks that basically have families and stuff. When our children's ministry is not up and running just yet, and it will be hopefully in the near future. And so we started doing this and making this to where when we speak, you can watch from home. And then we got the technology for the three rooms down the hallway there, as you can watch live there. Now here's why I'm saying all this. I'm fully confident. Not happy to be in a pandemic, obviously. I'm not happy with all of this, and none of us are. But our comeback is allowing us to reach more people in more different ways than we did before this. In our setback, we ask the question that God is asking us, what's in your hand? And we know more now about doing the technology stuff so people can sit home and watch than we ever did before. We learn what's in our hand. God placed us in a situation or allowed us a situation to where we had to do stuff different, out of our comfort zone. And I really believe it's going to make the ministry even more accessible to people. When I was growing up, and I remember I first started pastoring back in the early 80s, I remember we had shut-ins. People couldn't make, so we'd go visit them. And sometimes we'd take them a cassette tape. Cassette tape, remember that? Okay, and so they could hear the message. Now we have folks that are shut-in who are part of our service each and every week. See, when the pandemic came and we were set with our setback, God said, what's in your hand? And personally, I think that's for every one of us, is that whatever your setback, God says, okay, what's in your hand? What abilities do you have? What talents do you have? What relationships do you have that will come close to you and work with you? It's all in our hands. Would you bow your heads for just a moment? If you're new with us today, we're just going to have a prayer, and then Tony's going to come and give some announcements and have a last song. But this series and the rest of them, I believe, are on our website at cornerstonechurchct.com. And when we talked about doing a simple series as we get back into our own building and stuff, I kept thinking about the comeback. I want to come back. I want our country and our state to have comeback. I want our restaurants to have comebacks. I want things to succeed. But spiritually speaking, I think this has been a tough time for a lot of people. I'm convinced there are people that end up being casualties to this, that they got discouraged in all of this. I really believe that your comeback is greater than your setback. And I think the church's comeback is greater than the setback. And I think all of us in our life, the comebacks will be greater than the setback. I mean, kids have gone, I can't imagine what moms and dads are going through with younger kids. My kids are grown, and we have the six grandkids, and four of them are in school. Well, actually, all six of them are in school, actually. And the thing about it is, they had to do the hybrid teaching at home, and I can't imagine doing that. But when I talked to my oldest daughter, who has, all the way from fourth grade, fifth grade, 8th grade and 11th grade, I think to myself, she's told me they have bonded closer as a family in the last 8 months. And even the older teenager who was, had some challenges in high school, has really performed well during this time. And they've done more things together. And I'm not saying, this, thank God for a pandemic, not at all. But I think when you turn something that is a setback into something positive, the comeback is even greater. And I watched, them go through times where they're having taco night and stuff and all those things they're doing and stuff, and they're closer because they were kind of forced to become a family, where for a long time, teenagers, they're coming and going, they're friends, but when it was them, they had to unite together, and I've seen some positive things. And I'm not saying, thank God for a pandemic. All I'm saying is that, is a setback actually was used as a resource to create a family comeback, the unit being stronger than it ever was before. So I think setbacks are good for us in a sense, because if we handle it right, like I said last week, we can have a very good comeback. And sometimes a setback is a setup for a comeback. So whatever you're going through, the challenge you face, just truly believe this, that God really has something great ahead. Let's pray. Father, we thank you so much that you brought us together. I pray, Lord, as we give these words, that Lord, that they're encouraging. Then God, we thank you so much for our church family. I thank you for what we've learned through all of this. God, it's really, that's a big thing. You know, when we asked the questions 8 months ago, when we sat in the office with some of us, we didn't say it this way, what's in our hand? We said, what can we do? And God began to open our minds, understand, and I thank God for the talented people that really learn fast how to do things differently. And so, God, I thank you for our comeback, Lord, and I pray, Lord, that we continue that. I pray for everybody in this room, Lord, that whatever they've gone through, and maybe it's not even the pandemic, maybe your life has thrown some challenges, Lord, that I pray, Lord, that they would stop for a second and think of themselves as if you're asking them, what's in their hand? What is in your abilities to change the direction you're going in with my help? We ask in Christ's name, amen.